159 Ivy Street, Chapter 15. Do Kill the Messenger Braddon slept the way someone sleeps after a collapse. Not gently, not peacefully, but because the body finally overruled the mind. Machines hummed softly around him, indifferent witnesses to a man who had carried too much awake. When consciousness returned, it did so reluctantly. The ceiling tiles looked like a grid meant to keep thoughts in neat squares. His mouth was dry. His limbs felt borrowed. When he shifted, pain answered. Not sharp, but everywhere, as if grief had found a way to live inside muscle. He sat up too quickly and immediately regretted it. The first thought that came to his mind was Michelle. What a terrible way to find out that her sister had passed away, feeling so helpless and shocked. The light had shifted. Afternoon pressed softly against the window. It was already 3 p.m., 4 more hours until Michelle's plane lands in Toronto. The realization settled heavily. Time had moved without him again. Braddon rubbed his face, dragging his hands down until they rested uselessly in his lap. Lisa's name surfaced as it had all day, all night, all his life. Josephine followed unanswered messages, half-finished sentences, calls interrupted by silence. What a mess I have made. Lisa, Josephine, Elaine, take a number. Elaine's face flickered into his thoughts, how quickly she had come, how abruptly she had gone. Braddon replayed the moment she pulled away, the word blind echoing again. What did I say? What did I miss? He exhaled. The thought wasn't cruel, it was factual. Josephine had been holding her phone for so long that her fingers ached. It rested against her palm like something alive, but too quiet, too still. Every few seconds, she tilted it as if changing the angle might coax it into lighting up. Nothing. No missed calls, no apologies, no explanations. Morning had come and gone unnoticed. She stood at the window, watching the city move on without her, feeling absurdly left behind. Braddon's voice lingered in her head, as always, warm, familiar. Unfinished. Their last conversation had dissolved mid-thought like so many lately. Each interruption felt smaller on its own, but together they formed a pattern she couldn't ignore. I'm always the one waiting, she realized. The thought hurt more than she expected. She stared at the screen until it blurred. I won't call him again, she decided, then immediately thought of Natalie's. I need to call her. I can't call Braddon only to have him cut me out of his life again. I don't want to tell him how it made me feel each time, as if something else is more important. It's just a feeling, nothing more. Josephine had waited for her phone to ring all day, and it hadn't. It was time to use it. Hey, girlfriend, Josephine said when Natalie picked up, forcing brightness into her voice. It shattered almost instantly. Tears came hot and uninvited. Jose, whoa, no, you're not okay, Natalie said. What's going on? I haven't heard from you since New Year's Day. Josephine sat on the edge of the couch and stared at the floor. I think I'm falling in love with someone who's still standing in the wreckage of someone else. Didn't rush her. She let silence do its work. When did you last eat? Natalie asked gently. I don't know. Coming over, Natalie said without hesitation. Comfort food and wine, 30 minutes. Natalie, you're such a great friend and it sounds wonderful. I love to see you. Then, it's a party. See you soon. Josephine hung up and finally let herself breathe. She found the assurance and needed support to make sense of this relationship. A roller coaster ride of highs and lows that were not of their convictions. Outside interventions kept widening the physical distance, and the emotional toll got heavier after each phone call. It would be challenging for Josephine to explain since she was unclear about the details. Worst of all, Josephine was unsure if she remained a priority in his heart. Braddon had fallen back to sleep. The last thing he remembered was seeing Elaine's back as she headed towards the door. He sat up to clear his head and tried to assemble the event sequences from the last 24 hours, make some sense of them, and then tell Josephine that Lisa had gone. In 45 minutes, Natalie showed up at Josephine's front door, fresh EI bag in one hand, wine in the other. Josephine couldn't be happier seeing her friend. Natalie noticed the strain on Josephine's face. It was as if she hadn't slept at all and something was seriously troubling her. Hey, come in. I am so glad to see you. Josephine wrapped her in a hug. It was desperate, uncontained, and all the words she hadn't said pressed into Natalie's shoulder. Okay, Natalie laughed gently, dropping the bag on the counter. If I don't put this down, I'm filing a workplace injury. Natalie leaned back. I am worried about you. This Braddon thing is pissing me off, to be honest. They poured wine. Forks clinked against bowls. Eat, Natalie ordered. You can't solve heartbreak on an empty stomach. Josephine looked at the food on the table. This teriyaki bowl might be the only stable thing in my life right now, snorted. Low bar, but we'll take it. Josephine, what's going on? This relationship is unhealthy, and I don't think it's working for you. If Braden loves you, I mean, really loves you, then he needs to show it. He should get his ass here right now. Josephine laughed. Easy, Tiger. I know, I'm just frustrated too. Let me breathe, then I will tell you the whole story from the beginning. Freaking finally. Okay, let me pour another glass, start on my teriyaki bowl, and get comfortable. I want to know everything. Natalie had waited for this moment for months. Dr. Kwok entered the room with the practiced authority of someone who had seen too many endings to tolerate nonsense. How is Braden? He said. I see you're up, and you haven't touched your lunch. That's not good. Dr. Kwok came to check on Braden before punching out for the day. It had been a very long 18-hour shift with one casualty. We must give people in the medical field much credit for doing what they do. How can they go home and not feel responsible or saddened by the loss of a patient under their care? Then they do it all over again in 18 hours. Kings to them. You collapsed, Braden, Dr. Kwok said flatly. Hunger is no longer a negotiation. Braden attempted a smile. Failed. Hi, Doc, I wasn't hungry. But seriously, do you ever go home? Anyway, I am feeling better. I slept a lot, I think. Then I remember Lisa. The feelings came back and it started all over again. Braden sat up. He stared out the window into emptiness. His facial expression reflected a lost man on an island, alone with no plans or hope, with a mirage of love written in sand. Braden, it will take time. It has only been 30 hours. The wound is fresh, but you must be strong, especially when Lisa's sister arrives later today. I'm sorry, I forgot her name. Her name is Michelle. Thanks for reminding me. I must arrange a car to pick her up at the airport. She will be thrilled to see me. Sarcasm. I don't know what to say to her. It will kill her, then she will kill me. You have done nothing wrong, and you're not to be blamed, that's for damn sure. Braden, I am on my way out. My shift is done. This is what I can do. Here's my cell number. Dr. Kwok wrote his cell number on a card and then handed it to Braden. Braden took the card gladly. Doc, I appreciate this, but I think I need to do this alone. I'm glad to know I have a backup. You make sure my call doesn't go to voicemail when I call you. Braden tried to be funny, but his face told a different story. Mister Beckett, I am serious. You must eat something. I will check on you in the morning. One of the caretakers walked into the room to take away the breakfast tray. She noticed that the food wasn't touched at all. She looked at the doctor for further instructions. Dr. Kwok saw Becky etched on the woman's name tag. Good afternoon, Becky. I am Dr. Kwok. Can you do me a huge favor? Mr. Beckett here thinks food is optional. I'm grieving, Braden protested. Then grieve with protein, Dr. Kwok shot back. He is a difficult patient, but I don't care. He must consume food with protein and sugar every 6 hours. Since he was a bad boy, he didn't eat the lunch you brought him. Dr. Kwok turned his head to face Braden and shook his head a few times. Please bring another tray of eggs and toast, juice and coffee. I know this is not protocol, but Mr. Beckett needs to eat. Force it down his throat if you have to. The good news is that he should be released by tomorrow morning. Becky, can you do that for me? Becky laughed. I'll bring a plunger. You see, Dr. Kwok said. Motivation. Much as Becky felt reluctant to bring another tray for Braden, she nodded in compliance. Okay, doctor. I will swing back once I'm done collecting the trays on this floor. I will stay and watch to make sure he eats this time. Becky smiled at the doctor, then took the tray with her. Thank you, Becky. Dr. Kwok returned the smile and then turned to Braden. You better eat the damn food this time. Braden, if I have to come back again, you will eat through a tube, you get me? Ouch, okay, doc, I got the message. When the food comes, I eat, got it. They both chuckled before the doctor headed out the door. Braden looked at his cell phone for the time. It was 3:30. Why do I feel that time is trickling so slowly? I have about 3 hours. Come on, Brad, think. First, I got to arrange a pickup for Michelle. Damn, I don't know her last name. Michelle it is. Then I must return to Josephine. She must be so angry at me by now. OMG, I forgot about Emily. Oh shit. She will be in pieces when I tell her what happened, and she probably wants to come to the hospital, too. This is too much. Okay, one thing at a time. Call for Michelle's pickup. Braden had a contact at Airport Limo GTA. Hi, can I please speak to Jamal? Jamal is with a customer right now. Can I help you, or would you like to hold? Hi, I will stay on hold, thank you. The Airport Limo jingle ad started playing over the phone. Hello, this is Jamal. How can I help you? Hey Jamal, it's Braden Beckett. How are you, old friend? Hey my man Beckett, how are you? I haven't seen you since last year. Dude, last year was only 60 hours ago. Anyway, I need a pickup at the airport, but it's not for me. No problem. What terminal? Shit, I have no idea. I only know that the flight is from San Diego. It's arriving around 4 p.m. Sorry, that's all I have. Oh, her name is Michelle. Hey, are you getting a male bride? Kay, just kidding. All right, let me check all the arrivals online. After a few clicks, checking all the projected arrivals into the Pearson between 6:30 and 7 p.m., I got it. From San Diego, it's arriving at 6:50 p.m. at Term 1 International Gate. That's a shocker. It's on time. Okay, buddy, I can make it happen. Does Michelle have a last name? Don't laugh. In fact, there's nothing to laugh about. It will sound strange. I don't know her last name, that's the truth. Again, Braden was reminded that Lisa was gone and was the reason why Michelle was arriving today. Mister, Beckett, it's all good. I will have a sign held up with Michelle's name. I need you to text her to tell her to look for the sign. Can you at least do that? Good idea, Jamal. I can do that. Hey, thanks a lot, buddy. Okay, no problem. Mr. Beckett, is everything okay? Not really, Jamal, not really, but it will be. Thanks again. Hey, give me some of that. That teriyaki bowl looks yummy. Pass me a fork, please. Josephine realized that she hadn't eaten for almost 2 days. Here's your bowl, eat your own. Girl, get your shit together, then tell me the whole story about Braden. The words may have been harsh, but Josephine knew it was jokingly phrased. Natalie, this will be a crazy story. No, it is a crazy story. I was online one night on this chat program, and after a few boring conversations, I came across a posting that caught my attention. This was back in October. I can't remember when exactly. I think it was in the middle of October. Anyway, this line about the wind reaching out appeared across the heading, and it touched me. I can't explain it, but I felt it was talking to me, so I clicked and made the connection. This guy, Braden, from Toronto, started typing. My God, his words brushed me like feathers, and it felt amazing. I was hooked. First, it was just the connection, like the desert needing rain, and then it was my breath needing air. When I wasn't connected, I felt incomplete and left wanting. It was a drug, and I became an addict. When ingested, I felt complete and understood, like a love I never knew existed. I know it's stupid, unrealistic, and even dangerous. I don't care. They ate, slowly, comfortingly. Forks scraped bowls. Wine loosened the edges. Come on. Natalie, stop playing and say something already. Good or bad, I don't fucking care. Just say something. Natalie took her sweet time. She knew the expense was driving Josephine crazy. And then Josephine told her everything. About the chats, the words that felt like feathers, the way Braden's voice had filled spaces she didn't know were empty. It sounds insane when I say it out loud, Josephine admitted. We talk for hours, we feel real, and then something happens and he disappears again. Josephine sat quietly, waiting for Natalie's judgmental tone of criticism to blast out like a rocket taking off. Seconds ticked on as both looked at each other without a word uttered. Natalie listened. She took hold of her glass of wine, took a giant sip, and rested the glass on the table. She made a gesture, parted her lips as if she was about to speak, only to close them again. Josephine was getting impatient with the process, but it was still under control. Natalie finally said, Jose, I think it's absolutely bonkers that you're in love with someone you have never met and live so far away. On the other hand, I have never seen you so happy and sad simultaneously. Natalie took a deep breath. Girl, this is love and you have it. You got it bad. I am really happy for you, Jose. But what if this whole thing falls apart? Natalie reached out to take Josephine's hands and cup them. Josephine looked away from Natalie. Braden had a friend, an old friend, a lady friend he worked with. I'm not sure of the extent of their relationship, not exactly. There was history, could be my imagination or insecurity, whatever. It really doesn't matter anymore. Josephine, it's me. Relax. I'm here to support you, not to judge, okay? I'm 50% on the judgment part. Josephine laughed weakly. Natalie, there is one more thing I haven't told you. I'm meeting Brad in New York on February 14th, Valentine's Day, Empire State Building. Natalie's eyes widened. She nearly dropped her fork. What the fuck? Are you serious? Jose, why didn't you start with that? Oh my God, girl, this is epic. Oh wait, February 14th. Like the movie, oh, this is priceless. The flight from San Diego was aligned to runway 26 with the wheels down and ready to land. Michelle's plane touched down with a gentle thud that felt entirely wrong for the moment. The city beyond the window looked too normal, too alive. Michelle pressed her forehead to the glass, swallowing hard. In row 9, seat D, she was anxious to take her carry-on case and sprint off the plane. This would be her first landing in Toronto. It took the plane 15 minutes to reach the gate once it touched down. Michelle looked out the window and was surprised to see all the tall buildings in the downtown area of Toronto. The bigger surprise was that the exit to transportation was almost a km away. This is no small city, and definitely no igloos or snow to be seen. Michelle managed to find humor when all her worries were weighing down on her shoulders. "Lisa, I love you, and I miss you already. Oh my God, how long must I walk to leave this terminal? It goes on forever. Welcome to Toronto International Airport." There must have been 100 people waiting when Michelle got to the customs area. There were three lines, which were insane, one for Canadians and one for visitors, which made perfect sense. However, the third line was for French-speaking Canadians, a head-scratcher that Michelle couldn't understand, and why the distinction was needed. Luckily, the line for visitors had the fewest people waiting. "Passport, please. What is the purpose of your trip, Michelle?" The customs officer looked official and seemed friendlier than most in the U.S. "Hi, I am here for my sister. She had a car accident and she passed away. I am here to see her at the hospital." "I am so sorry, Michelle. I'm sorry for your loss. You're all set to go. All the best." "I hope and thank you, officer." Wow, so this is what Canada is like. It is true what they say about Canadians. They are so polite. The double door swung open to a two-way ramp. Michelle saw the sign for transportation and quickly walked to the exit. Along the way was a wall of people with signs and a name written on each. She saw one with her name on it, but she didn't think twice that it was meant for her. "Excuse me, are you Michelle from San Diego? Do you have a friend named Braden?" "Oh my God, yes, I know Braden, and I flew in from San Diego." "Well, that worked out great. Hello, Michelle. Braden asked me to pick you up and drive you to the hospital. Please come with me." "He did. That's very nice, but why didn't he pick me up?" "Oh, I guess you didn't know. Braden was hospitalized yesterday. He had a fall or something like that." Ride to the hospital was quiet and long. Michelle didn't know what to think. She thought about calling Braden, but decided to wait. Michelle has a sickening feeling that something terrible has happened. She refused to believe further before her head exploded. She closed her eyes, and then everything turned dark. Braden checked the time on his watch. It was 6:57. "Michelle must be on the way here by now. What do I say? Damn, what do I say?" Braden checked his cell for messages. There were 4 unread texts, and they were all from Emily. "Oh shit, Emily. I need to call her back. Fuck, how do I tell her that Lisa is gone?" Braden took a deep breath as he read Emily's messages. He pressed the phone symbol on the cell. Emily's name popped up and it started ringing. "Excuse me, Michelle, we have arrived at the hospital." "Sorry, I must have drifted off. Thank you. Let me get my stuff and I will be out of your way." "It's all good. Take your time and best of luck to you." Gave the driver a half smile and left the vehicle. She stared at the hospital entrance, took a few breaths, and entered the lobby. It was pretty quiet. 2 ladies were behind the front counter. "Hi, my name is Michelle Clooney. Can you please tell me the room number for Braden Beckett? Are you family to Mr. Beckett? He's about to have his super." "Well, I am not, but would that make a difference?" "No, I suppose not. Visiting hours for non-family members end at 8. Mr. Beckett is on the 4th floor, room number 417. Take a right in the next hallway and take the elevator to the 4th floor. Any questions?" "No, you have been very helpful, thank you." Emily picked up the call on the second ring. "Braden, oh my God, what's happening? How's Lisa?" Emily sounded like she had too much coffee. "Emily, I don't have good news. In fact, I was admitted to the same hospital 24 hours ago. Anyway, I have no other way to say it." Before Braden could finish, Emily interrupted. "What?" "You were admitted, wait, are you saying what I think you're saying? Lisa, is she?" "Emily, I am sorry, I am so sorry to have to tell you Lisa survived the surgery, but there were complications. There was swelling and it couldn't be controlled. We lost her. We lost Lisa." There was silence, and then Braden could hear Emily crying on the phone. He felt the guilt all over again, and tears started dripping down his cheeks onto the bed. "I can't believe we were the last people she saw before the accident. Lisa was so upset with me at the restaurant. It's all my fault, I fucked up." Emily let the phone slide off her palm, and it landed on the floor. Braden could hear Emily crying in the distance, and there was nothing he could do but press the end call button on his cell. Somebody knocked on the door to room 417. "Hello, may I come in?" Braden looked up to see Michelle at the door. His eyes were still red as he quickly wiped the tears off his cheek. There she was, posture folded inward, and suddenly, unbearably, she looked like her sister. Her facial features were stunning, like Lisa's strawberry blonde hair. Michelle had a killer smile that could melt ice glaciers. You must be Michelle. I don't have many visitors from San Diego too often. I'm not that lucky. Braden said softly. She swallowed. Hi, Braden. You're funny, as I have expected. I can see why my sister liked you. Why are you here? I mean, in a bed. Are you sick? Michelle asked, fear creeping into her voice. Sit down, pull up the chair. Let's talk, she did. Her hands trembled in her lap. Jesus, Bradley, oh, sorry. I mean, Braden, I know my sister called you that. Are you dying or something? Her smile vanished. Michelle, I'm here because of Lisa, he said. I don't mean that I have been here in the hospital with Lisa. I mean, he continued, tears slowly falling from the corner of his eyes, crossing Braden's face. Michelle's breath caught. What do you mean? I've been here since Lisa didn't come back. His facial expression became sullen. Michelle stared at him, searching his face, not for guilt, not for answers, but for her sister, and she found her. In the way his voice softened, in the way his eyes filled, in the way he said Lisa's name like a prayer, the man who had known her sister's laughter, her anger, her softness, the man who had loved her in the way that mattered most. You're the last person who truly knew her, Michelle said quietly. You're the closest thing I have left to her. Braden closed his eyes and nodded. I'll tell you everything, he promised. Every moment, every laugh, every almost. For the first time since the phone call, Braden didn't feel alone in the telling. Michelle reached for his hand as if touching him might anchor her to what remained. Outside, the city continued. Inside, two people began the slow, necessary work of remembering someone they loved together. Braden. You have to stop blaming yourself. She stood up, towering over the hospital bed. Braden's cell phone went off. Braden picked up his phone, which was lying by his side. Shit, who could this? Screen flashed, showing the caller Dr. Kwok. Michelle, it's Dr. Kwok on the phone. The incomprehensible may just become comprehensible. Michelle realized the gravity of such a reality, and it was choking the breath out of her. Braden, is there something you want to tell me? If you don't, then answer your fucking phone, and I will talk to Dr. Kwok. This version of Michelle is a hell demon on heels, and she's in a bad mood and ready to kill. Braden pressed the answer button. Dr. Kwok, I have Michelle here in the room. We are both here. I think it's best that you talk. I may not survive the day. Braden looked up at Michelle. They locked eyes, and then she knew she no longer had a living sister.